opening session, part one.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Famous Jury Trials, fictionized dramatizations of cases typical of many, taken from actual court history. The dramatic story of our courts, where rich and poor alike, guilty and innocent, stand before the bar of justice.
Court is in session. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of the evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government.
People versus Stephen.
It is early evening in a large eastern city. In a small midtown apartment hotel, a short, broad-shouldered man named Alan Carter walks quickly along a corridor on the 11th floor. As he turns around a bend in the hall, he sees an excited group of people standing in front of the door toward which he has been walking.
Hey, what happened here?
Look for yourself.
Johnny Evans.
It was Johnny Evans. Someone pumped a couple of slugs into him and made sure both he and his jockey days were over.
Who did it?
I don't know, but I got a hunch it was these four.
2 days later, the police arrest Paul Stevens, a well-known playboy. And in his opening address to the jury, the district attorney declared...
The state will prove that Paul Stevens fired the shots that killed Johnny Evans. This was a vicious, premeditated murder by a man for whom the code of decency meant only an invitation to violate it. We will show that Paul Stevens deserves but one verdict from this court. Guilty of murder in the first degree. For its first witness, the state calls Alan Carter. Alan Carter, take the stand.
Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, after God?
I do.
Be seated.
Mr. Carter, when was the first time you met the defendant?
Just about a month ago.
Where did you meet him?
At a card game.
Will you tell what happened at the game, please?
Well, it was a pretty rough afternoon for me and Stevens. Both of us dropped a couple of healthy-sized bundles. But after the rest of the mob had cleared out of the room counting their change, me and Stevens sat around for a few minutes, sympathizing with one another.
Those guys must have had aces or horseshoes in their pockets.
Ah, that's the way it goes, Stevens.
Sure, but does it have to be the same way all the time?
What's your kick? You got a big enough kitty waiting when your old man kicks off.
Cut it, I don't like it.
Okay, okay, take it easy.
I'm out of my father's will.
Thinks you're a bad boy, huh?
Something like that.
Listen, Stevens, I got an angle.
Like what?
Look, how much did you drop this afternoon?
About 9,000, why?
Well, with what I got figured out, you'll get 5 times that back.
Yeah? Go on.
You know which horse is favored to win the 4th race tomorrow?
Sure, Prince Hal.
Yeah, that's the baby. Now, the only other horse in that race that can give Prince Hal any trouble is a hayburner named Sky King.
Hayburner is right. He hasn't a prayer cutter, and you know it.
Look, I got a surprise for you. I'm betting on him.
You must make a hobby out of losing money. First this afternoon, now Sky King.
All right, then listen to this, Stevens. The race is fixed.
Fixed?
That's what I said.
But, well, are you sure?
Sure enough to lay 40 grand on Sky King to win.
Say, how'd you do it?
You see, Johnny Evans and me like the same things, especially money. I'm giving him some as a present to keep Prince Hal from getting too ambitious.
Hey, can I get in on it?
I told you about it, didn't I? How much can you raise?
About 10,000.
Oh, can't you get more?
No.
Well, okay. I tell you, bring the dough to my hotel in the morning. I'm at the Clinton.
Well, I thought I'd place the bet with my own bookie.
No, that's no good. Too much money begins showing in the wrong places, the odds will drop to nothing. Let me place it for you.
Well, all right.
Swell. Now, how about a drink?
Ah, sure thing.
We'll drink to Prince Hal, the best also-ran that ever lived. Hello, Stevens. Am I in time?
Sure, come in. The results will be on the air in a few minutes.
Who is it, Paul?
Come on out, John. I want you to meet Alan Carter.
Just a second.
I hear you got a pretty wife, Steve.
Oh, well, she's out of this world.
I didn't know married men still talk like that.
Married men talk like what?
Oh, I was just telling Carter how beautiful you are, baby.
Yes, and now I believe him. I'm glad to know you, Mrs. Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Please sit down.
Well, I'd like to, but that race has me too nervous. You better turn on the radio, Steve.
Yeah, sure.
I hope you two know what you're doing.
Oh, this is a sure thing, Mr. Stevens.
There is no such animal.
All right. Stick around and laugh.
Quiet, will you? Hear this.
Race. It was Arrowhead, the winner, paying 660 to win, 420 to place, and 330 to show. Mainliner second, 880 to place, and $4 even to show. Swifty was a third horse, 260 to show.
That's not your race, is it?
Quiet, John.
I hear the results of the fourth race coming in. The winner is expected from wire to wire, the favorite Prince House.
What happened to that jockey, that dirty double-crossing...
Carter, you'll wipe me out.
Shut up, I'm in this, too.
But you promised me, you said it was
wait
all fake.
Wait till I get that Johnny Evans.
Cut it out, both of you. Okay, you lost, now forget it.
Jonah, you're crazy, we're broke. How can I forget it?
Well, what can you do about it? Kill the jockey?
That's not a bad idea.
What?
You know, I think you got something there, Miss Stevens.
Johnny Evans, huh?
Paul, stop it. Forget about the money. We'll work something out.
Sure, but right now I've only got one plan and it concerns Mr. Johnny Evans.
In other words, Mr. Carter, the last time you saw Paul Stevens, it was your definite impression that he was going to kill Johnny Evans.
Yes, sir.
Your witness.
Mr. Carter, why have you been so liberal in showing yourself to be a crooked gambler?
Objection! The witness is not on trial here.
Your Honor, I'm merely trying to show that the witness is testifying as a result of a deal he's made with the district attorney. If he helps to convict my client, then the district attorney will recommend leniency when Carter's own trial for bribery comes up.
It is common practice for men under indictment to assist the state by revealing any important information they may have. For cooperation of this nature, I think it only fair that leniency be exercised. The objection is sustained, and counsel will confine his examination of the witness to the matter at hand.
Very well, Your Honor. All right, now tell me, Mr. Carter, what is your occupation?
I make... investment.
What was the last investment that you made?
Well, I,
Was it a dice game or at the racetrack?
Now, look, I offered to tell exactly what happened so I could see this killer here gets what he deserves.
Your Honor, I ask the witness's last remarks be stricken from the record. They show an obviously biased and prejudged opinion.
Granted. The jury will ignore the witness's last piece of testimony.
You seem quite anxious to convict my client, Mr. Carter. Besides your strong desire to see justice done... Is it possible that you only want suspicion diverted from you?
No.
Did you really bet the money the defendant gave you? Did you keep it?
Well, I had to bet it.
Why? What was to stop you from keeping it? You knew your horse didn't have a chance. All you had to do was to tell the defendant the bet had been placed and lost.
No, I don't operate that way.
Oh, of course you don't. Fixing horse races is a sign of an ethical man.
Your Honor, I object. The witness is being persecuted by the defense in an attempt to confuse the jury. So far, defense hasn't introduced one bit of evidence to contradict Mr. Carter's testimony.
He's testifying to save his own neck.
But that doesn't prove he's lying about your client.
Interesting repartee, gentlemen. But let's have no more of it. What is the defense trying to prove by this line of questioning?
One simple point, Your Honor. And that is that Alan Carter had just as strong a motive to kill Johnny Evans as the defendant is claimed to have had.
Then direct your questioning to that point. Now proceed.
Mr. Carter... By your own admission, you lost more money on the race than the defendant.
Well, I...
Yes or no, Mr. Carter?
Yes, I did, but I could afford it better. Stevens claimed he was wiped out.
Just why could you afford it better?
Well, I just could, that's all.
Isn't it true that there are four judgments on file against you for loan defaults?
I don't remember.
Then I'd like to help you two. I have right here in my hand an official transcript from the municipal court clerk showing that the four judgments I just referred to were awarded within the last 2 years. Your Honor, I'd like to have this transcript entered in the record.
If there are no objections, clerk will accept the transcript for entry.
I thank you, Your Honor. Now, Mr. Carter, since we've established that you couldn't afford to lose that large...
I said... I was in a movie.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. I just wanted the jury to be certain that is what you said. In a movie. The greatest stock alibi ever invented. That's all, Mr. Carter.
The defense has scored an important advantage. By his skillful cross-examination, the defense attorney has projected Alan Carter into the spotlight as a possible suspect. But the prosecution is not to be stopped so easily. For its next witness, the state calls Nick Thompson, a bartender at the Club 6.
Mr. Thompson, please tell the court what happened on the afternoon of March 14th.
Yes, sir. Well, it was about 4 o'clock when I noticed this fellow at the end of the bar.
Hey,
Bartender, another double whiskey.
Okay, pal, it's your stomach. Here, enjoy yourself.
Sure. Why not?
I give you a tip, pal. You don't get rid of trouble that way.
No?
After your head goes down in the morning, it'll still be there.
You got trouble?
No, I gave up the horses. I didn't have the heart to keep losing.
Horses? Who said anything about horses?
You haven't been complaining about a woman.
Come here.
Yeah?
Tell me something. What did you do if a jockey double-crossed you, huh?
Say, you have got trouble.
It's Johnny Evans. He didn't play ball. He said he'd do it, but he didn't. He let us down.
Hey, take it easy.
He promised to hold up on Prince Hal, but he didn't.
You better take another drink.
I don't want another drink. I want Evans. I want him for what he did to me.
Hey, where are you going?
I've got to get that guy. I've
got to
get him.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. You're a witness.
Mr. Thompson, did you make any attempt to communicate that alarming bit of information to the authorities?
No.
Well, why not?
I didn't take it seriously at the time.
Then why are you testifying now?
Well, when I saw Mr. Stevens' picture in the paper, read about being arrested for killing a jockey.
You mean accused of killing the jockey, Mr. Thompson?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I thought I ought to tell what I heard. That's all.
And at the time, you didn't think it was too important. You thought it was just the imagination of a man who had had one too many, isn't that right?
Objection! The defense is framing the witness answer.
Overruled. The witness is not being coerced. Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. To repeat then, Mr. Thompson, you did nothing about the defendant's so-called threat because you considered it just a drunken boast.
Yeah.
You've often heard such bold talk from many others at your bar, haven't you?
Sure.
That's all. Thank you.
Herman Garson to the stand.
Herman Garson to the stand.
Raise your right hand. You sound like you want to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth after you're done.
Yes, I do.
Please, Peter. Mr. Garson, what is your occupation?
I am the desk clerk at the Royal Farm Department Hotel.
Is that where Johnny Evans lives?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever seen the defendant before?
Yes, sir.
Where?
At the hotel.
Go on, please.
Well, it was on the day of the murder. I was on duty at the desk when I looked up to see this fellow standing in front of me.
Pardon me. Does Johnny Evans live here?
Who's calling, please?
Just give me his room number, that's all.
I'm sorry, but no guest can go upstairs unannounced.
But it's a surprise. I'm a friend of his.
Rules are rules. I'm sorry.
Look, you could use a nice new tie, couldn't you? Here, buy yourself a hand-painted special. Now, what's his room number?
Hey, you better get out of here, mister.
Okay. The name is Stevens. Now, what's his room number?
I'll tell him you're here, Mr. Stevens. Mr. Evans, please. Hand-painted tie, indeed. Hello? There's a Mr. Stevens here to see you. Yes. Yes, he says he's a friend of yours. All right, Mr. Evans. Thank you.
Well?
The answer is no.
Hey,
let go of my shirt.
Listen, you legal eagle. Tell that crooked midget he can't hide for the rest of his life. Do you get me? Tell him he can't.
And you say that with that, he walked out of the hotel.
Yes, sir. The hotel detective saw what was happening, and he started to come over to my rescue. Mr. Stevens left rather quickly.
When was the body discovered?
I object! That question is timed to connect the murder with the visit of the defendant.
Sustained. The prosecution will indicate that the witness is being questioned on a new point.
I apologize, Your Honor. The sequence of questions was entirely accidental. Now, Mr. Garson, how did you happen to find the body?
Well, several phone calls had come in from Mr. Evans, and since I hadn't seen him go out, I felt something might be wrong.
You went upstairs, opened the door, and found the body on the floor.
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, the district attorney is to be complimented on his concern for the witness. He even prepares the answers for it. May I ask the same privilege?
Your Honor, if my colleague can think of any answers for the witness, he is welcome to the privilege. Your witness.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Garson,
is there anything to connect the visit of the defendant with Johnny Evans' murder?
Why, what do you mean?
Well, did he actually threaten the jockey's life?
Oh, no.
Did you see him re-enter the hotel, go upstairs to Evans' room?
No.
All right, just one more thing, Mr. Garson. Did Alan Carter ever visit Johnny Evans?
Yes, sir.
That's all. Just one more thing, Mr. Garson. Did Alan Carter ever visit Johnny Evans?
Yes, sir.
That's all.
Facing the packed courtroom, the district attorney indicates he has called his last witness. Then, turning to the jury, he declares...
The state's case is complete. The evidence presented by our witnesses makes it unnecessary for us to prolong the length of this trial. We have already clearly established one main essential point, that Paul Stevens, angered by what he considered to be a double cross, killed the man he thought responsible. The story is rapidly coming to a close. We have given you a beginning and a middle. It is up to you to supply the ending. A verdict of guilty. The state rests.
Is the defense ready to present its case?
We are, Your Honor.
Proceed.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, it is the duty of the defense counsel to claim the innocence of his client. This I most certainly do. But in the proving of my claim, I have been generously helped by the district attorney. He has not produced one single witness who saw the defendant commit the crime with which he is charged. He has only given you a mass of innuendo. The defense, ladies and gentlemen, will give you facts. Facts that will establish beyond the shadow of a doubt the innocence of my client. For its first witness, the defense calls Paul Stevens.
Paul Stevens, take the stand.
Raise your right hand. You saw me swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Help your gun.
I do.
Be seated.
Mr. Stevens, did you kill Johnny Evans?
No, I didn't.
Have you any idea of who did kill Johnny Evans?
No.
Thank you. Your witness.
Mr. Stevens, where did you go after you visited Johnny Evans' hotel the afternoon of his death?
I went to a small house I own in the country.
Did anybody see you there? Townspeople? Neighbors?
No, it's a summer resort. There was no one around.
Then you have no witnesses to the fact that you were there.
Yes, there was a witness.
Who?
Well, a friend of mine, Scott Ridgely.
Where is he?
I don't know.
Please, Mr. Stevens. The court is sympathetic to imagination. But you can hardly expect anyone to believe that this friend you speak of offers proof of your alibi if he hasn't come forward to help you.
Well, I tell you, he's disappeared. We've tried to find him. My wife searched the city for him.
Well, it's strange that your counsel hasn't mentioned this mysterious missing witness to the court, Mr. Stevens. Perhaps he finds it a trifle embarrassing.
I don't require any assistance from the prosecution in preparing my case. I suggest the district attorney take a little more care in his. So far, all we've learned from him is a lesson in how to fix the horse race.
I would like to see a little more of the oratory directed to this case.
Yes, Your Honor. Before I dismiss the witness, I would merely like to state that the defendant's weak alibi is only an indication of the weakness of his entire case. You say, Mr. Stevens, that you didn't kill Johnny Evans, yet a friend who can clear you seems to be missing. Is that right?
I swear it's the truth.
Oh, I'm sure it is. That's all. You may step down.
Mrs. Jones Stevens to the stand, please.
Mrs. Jones Stevens, take the stand, please. Raise your right hand. You saw me swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, haven't you, God?
I do.
Be seated.
Mrs. Stevens, did your husband kill Johnny Evans?
No, he couldn't have.
Did you say that just out of love for your husband? Or is there a more material basis?
I don't have any proof. If we could only find Scott Ridgely, he'd prove my husband is innocent.
Objection! We've already been over that piece of ground.
Sustained. If a possible witness fails to appear, no one has the authority to speak for him.
Very well, Your Honor. Now tell me, Mrs. Stevens, do you know of anyone else who would have a motive to kill Johnny Evans?
Alan Carter. He claimed Evans was going to throw the race, and when he didn't, he had just as much reason to kill him.
Do you know of no other suspect?
Well, no one I can think of.
Mrs. Stevens, did you ever ask your husband for a divorce?
What?
Have you ever wanted a divorce?
Of course not. My husband and I are happily married.
How much insurance has your husband, you know?
I don't know why you're asking all these questions.
I have a reason, Mrs. Stevens. Believe me. Please don't be frightened.
I'm not frightened.
Good. Now, how much insurance does your husband carry?
I don't know. I've never discussed it with him.
But you're the beneficiary.
I suppose so.
That's all, Mrs. Stevens.
Mrs. Stevens, where was your husband at the time of the killing?
He says he was at our country house.
I asked if you knew where he was.
Well, I...
Did you see him at the country house?
No.
Then you have no way of knowing that he didn't shoot the jockey?
Well...
Have you?
No.
You recall Mr. Carter's description of the afternoon at your house when the race results came over the radio?
I do.
Was it accurate?
I think so.
Then you heard your husband say that he would get Johnny Evans.
He didn't say it like that.
Then how did he say it? It's no matter, Mrs. Stevens. We have the general idea. That's all.
Now the district attorney has stemmed the tide running in favor of the defense. His sharp, incisive questioning of Mrs. Stevens will force the defense to bring in new evidence or concede the fact that the defendant had publicly threatened the jockey's life and then carried out his threat. The defense attorney holds a hurried consultation with his client.
Listen, what's the idea? Why'd you ask those questions of Joan?
Relax, Paul. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, but you treated Joan as if she was on trial.
Is the defense ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Take it easy, Paul. It has to be this way. Don't worry now. Scott Ridgely, to the stand, please.
A current of excitement sweeps through the courtroom as a tall, narrow-shouldered man walks nervously to the witness chair. This is the high point of the trial. The defense has found the missing witness. What testimony can he give to save his friend, Paul Stevens? The crowd leans forward eagerly.
Mr. Ridgely, you're a friend of Paul Stevens, aren't you?
Yes.
How did you meet the defense?
Joan, his wife, introduced us. She and I were once engaged. We grew up together in the same town.
Then you know Mrs. Stevens very well.
Oh, yes, sir.
Would you tell the court what happened on the afternoon of March 14th, please?
Well, I had a date at the Stevens apartment for cocktails. When I pressed the buzzer at their door...
Hello, Scott.
No smile for an old friend.
I don't feel much like smiling.
Well, goodbye.
Where are you going?
Listen, honey, I've got enough troubles of my own. I came here to forget them, not to find new ones.
You've picked a bad time. There are things worse than your trying to keep the secret that your business is on the rocks.
How did you know about that?
Oh, Joni gets around. Don't worry, Scott. I won't tell your creditors on you.
Listen, let it die, will you? If that gets out, they'll close me in a day.
Right now, I have something else to worry about.
Say, what are we doing? Matching our bad luck stories?
See if you can top this. Paul is on his way to kill a man.
Sure. And I am the king of the Eskimos.
This isn't a joke, Scott. It's straight.
Well, for... Say, what's it all about?
Paul and a man named Alan Carter bet on a horse because a jockey was bribed.
Uh-uh. Go on.
The jockey didn't come through, that's all. Now Paul is out to get him. He dropped 10,000. Every penny we had. We're broke. Wiped out.
So now Paul wants to make murder the payoff.
And he's going to do it. He tore out of here a half an hour ago like a madman.
Why didn't you call the cops?
And have Paul picked up and booked? Nothing doing.
But we've got to stop him.
Sure, but how?
But crazy fool.
You can't stop him.
Maybe, but I can try. So long, Joan. I've got to find...
What did you do after that, Mr. Ridgely?
I phoned Johnny Evans and warned him, but he laughed it off. He said he had no time for cranks.
When did you next see Paul Stevens?
That same afternoon. You see, I knew he wouldn't have the nerve to kill Evans, and I figured he'd go somewhere to cool off, a place where he could think things out.
And where did you find him, Mr. Ridgely?
At his house in the country. I was with him from 6 in the evening to 10 o'clock.
Order! Order!
Mr. Ridgely, why haven't you come forward before this to corroborate the defendant's alibi?
Because of something that happened after he'd been arrested. You see, when I heard the news flash on the radio, I phoned his house.
Hello?
Joan, this is Scott. I just heard the news. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Scott, but there's nothing you can do now.
Hold on to your hat, honey, but there is something I can do. Save Paul's life.
What?
You heard it right. He didn't kill Johnny Evans.
Too bad you can't prove it.
But I can. I was with him that evening. Didn't he tell you?
No.
I can prove his alibi.
Scott, can you get over here right away?
Sure.
Then hurry. I'll be waiting for you.
Come on, Joan. Get your hat on. We've got to get moving.
Come in, Scott. I want to talk to you.
Okay. You know, for a wife who's about to get her husband back, you don't look too happy.
I don't want him back.
I figured... What was that?
I don't want him back. He's got to die.
Are you crazy?
I will be if I let you walk out of here to give Paul an alibi.
I don't get it. You and Paul, I always thought you were divorce proof.
As long as Paul had his money, we got along. Now he's gambled every penny of it away. He's broke.
I still don't believe you mean all this.
Listen, Scott, I've got a deal for you.
Forget it.
Don't be a sucker all your life. I know your business is on the rocks. I'm giving you a chance to pull it together again.
Shut up. I don't want to listen.
Paul will leave me a policy worth $50,000. You'll get half, Scott. $25,000. That's a lot of money, and it's all yours.
Paul's my friend.
$25,000.
But he'll die for that money.
What's he ever done to you? Take the money. It'll save your business.
I told you to keep quiet about that. No one's to know.
And with the money, they never will.
Forget about my business. Forget it.
Then take the money, and I won't have to think about the business.
I can't.
Just leave town until after the trial. It's such a simple thing. $25,000 to save your business. $25,000.
Go on, Mr. Ridgely.
Well, she kept at me like that for an hour. I was afraid she'd tell my business was folding up. If I could keep it quiet for just a few more weeks, I'd be okay. But if she told anyone,
I understand, Mr. Ridgely.
She made me agree to take the money. But I don't want it. Paul Stevens is innocent.
This startling new evidence stuns the court. It is several minutes before the attendants can restore order. The defense attorney's summation to the jury is swift and compelling.
Knowing that her husband would instantly be suspected of the crime, Joan Stevens phoned Johnny Evans, made a date with him, and killed him. She wanted her husband out of the way for the simplest motive in the world. Money. Paul Stevens had gambled away every penny, but he had one possession left, his insurance. And the only way she could get that was by his death. So she framed him as a murderer, planning on the state's cooperation to climax her scheme. It seemed like the perfect crime, but there was one slipper. Scott Ridgely could confirm her husband's alibi. So she set out to silence him by a bribe. But fortunately, he decided, while time still remained, to frustrate her scheme. And you, the jury, will complete the frustration of her plan.
The prosecutor is brief. He tells the jury he is interested only in seeing that justice is done. The minutes seem like hours as the closed door of the jury room hides Paul Stevens' fate. Finally, the door is opened and jurors file briskly back into their seats.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
What is your verdict?
We find the defendant not guilty.
Not guilty.
As Paul Stevens is surrounded by an enthusiastic crowd of spectators, few people notice the court attendant who leads Joan Stevens out of the room toward a murder indictment and a trial for her life.
And so ends another famous jury trial. These exciting dramatizations are brought to you each week by the American Broadcasting Company. Next week, we will present the trial of the people versus Frank Connors. Court is adjourned. All names, times, and places mentioned on tonight's program are fictional. Famous Jury Trials is produced and directed by Wiley Adams. Tonight's script was written by Alvin Boris. Your narrator was Norman Rose. The cast included Robert Harris, Jim Bowles, Wendell Holmes, William Snow, Eugene Francis, Mary Orr, and Bernard Grant. Be sure to listen next week when the American Broadcasting Company presents another famous jury trial. Now here's a special program note. Lawyer, criminologist, sometimes detective. It's John J. Malone who makes murder his business. For suspenseful listening, don't miss Murder and Mr. Malone tonight over this ABC station. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.